Okay, coming up, a really fascinating conversation with a local champion who represents a local nonprofit that we all love.
Citizens Project.
Right here on Loving the Springs, where we celebrate the best and elevate the rest.
You're listening to Studio 809 Podcasts, the cure for common apathy and indifference. Reported side effects include a sense of being informed and engaged. Ask your doctor if Studio 809 is right for you.
Hi, I'm Dave Gardner.
I'm Carrie Simison.
I'm Steph Vigil.
And I'm Al Brody.
On Loving the Springs, we're glad to have Steph Vigil in the studio with us, because there's a pretty cool event coming up related to Citizens Project. And Steph, you are interim executive director?
Correct. I'm serving at Citizens Project right now. For folks who, if you're new to town, if you don't know about us, I'll give the very quick elevator spiel on what Citizens Project is. We are a civic engagement and voter education nonprofit. We've been around since 1992. So back in the early 90s, a lot of those conservative religious organizations started moving in, and there was a lot of push for a certain kind of agenda that I think people were not familiar with here, we're not used to. And so a number of organizations sprung up to push back against that and to make sure that people's voices were still being heard in local government, and Citizens Project was one of them. So we have a big event coming up on the 12th of July, which is a Saturday at 8 a.m. at the Carter Payne. It's our annual Creating Community Breakfast. And this year's theme is The Work Continues, which I think maybe a lot of us are feeling like that is sort of the thing that's hovering over us right now, is having to just continue the work when we feel discouraged. And so that's the theme of our event this year.
You can sort of tell that she has some political background, because you only have to ask her one question and off she goes. Great interview.
That's a wrap, all right, isn't it?
No, not quite. But I think let's give people a little bit more background about you. You've had a long, I think a pretty long and storied career or life of public service. What should we share with our listeners about your background?
Sure. My other title that I tend to use right now, and it is all hyphenated, feel free to make it one word, is former and future state representative. I did serve one term in the state house. I didn't quite get reelected last year. And so this is kind of calling it my side quest. Citizens Project has found ourselves in just a time of transition and has kind of turned over some leadership and needed someone to step in for a while. And I just felt like, of all the things that are precious in this community that need to be taken care of and made stronger, Citizens Project is definitely one of them. I do not want to live in a Colorado Springs that doesn't have a strong Citizens Project. And so I felt like this is a good way for me to continue to serve our city while I'm not in elected office.
That's awesome. I have a coin purse that I think might kind of put it in a nutshell what you guys still do. And it says, I can't believe I have to bleeping still protest this bleep.
I want
one of
those.
And it's this wonderful old woman with all of the gray hair. And as soon as I saw that, I knew I had to have it, because when Citizens Project started, it was in response to Amendment 2. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And here we are this many years later, and not just locally, but nationally, coming up against the same things that you almost think you've got tackled.
Yeah. And I think that's so much of the story of Colorado Springs as well, right? I think we have a narrative about our city that it's this, you know, like very like religious conservative, big business run. Like there's a lot of stories about us, but then there's also the more permanent community that was here before and will be here after. There has always been queer joy in Colorado Springs. And there has always been an artistic, diverse, creative community here that doesn't stand for that sort of authoritarianism. And whether or not, you know, that part of the community is in power and has a bigger voice or a smaller voice, it's not going anywhere. So we will continue to stand up and push back anytime that the rights, especially the rights of the queer community. I mean, that was like the big impetus, I think, for Citizens Project, like you said, against Amendment 2. And it continues to be a challenge, right? I mean, I think, you know, the folks who like that culture war have certainly picked new victims. They've picked new targets, right? It was same-sex couples before, and now they're going after trans people, and especially trans kids. And so if that's who we have to defend this year, then that's who we're defending this year.
Now, I've crossed paths a lot with Citizens Project, and especially in the last few years, because I help League of Women Voters with a lot of their voter education work. They are a fellow Studio 809 podcaster, Making Democracy Work podcast. Whenever there's an election underway, you can get candidate forums and issues forums frequently. And Citizens Project was frequently a partner in those.
Yeah.
And that was under the leadership of Mike Williams for the last couple of years. Mike left, and you have stepped in temporarily. Yep. And I hear, or I've read, that Citizens Project has been sort of doing some assessment. And so we probably should be expecting some changes if we haven't already seen some. And I think maybe we have.
Sure. I can speak to it a little bit.
We don't want to have to do a spoiler alert. If people really want to hear all the full details,
sure,
they need to come to the Creating Community Breakfast.
They should come to that breakfast.
July 12th.
Yes,
right. And we'll
yes.
put a link in the show notes.
Or they should drop a line at director@citizensproject.com and request a meeting with me, because I will not say no to a meeting. We'll meet with anyone. So
don't spoil it all.
I won't spoil it all. So
here's
kind of the broad overview, right, is that in the last handful of years, I think we all remember certainly 2020, that after George Floyd's murder, we had a lot of reckoning about racial justice, police brutality, racial inequality. But even the year before that, you know, that there was a police killing of a young man, Devon Bailey, in Southeast Colorado Springs that also really caused a lot of hurt and heartbreak in the community. And Citizens Project around that time, and of course, this is before me, I'm right digging up old records and pulling from my own memory about kind of how things have gone. I think it's really important that no organization that is trying to empower the community, educate voters, increase civic engagement, you kind of can't ignore racial injustice in the grand scheme of things. You can't just leave it out. You can't be race neutral. And so we've been going through at Citizens Project quite a change from being pretty neutral on racial injustice to making it part of our mission, part of our work, part of our programming. And that is a hard thing to do for an organization that's been around for 30 years and hasn't really confronted those things directly. And I think that big shift creates a lot of other opportunities for growth, if we wanted to put it in a really, really tidy way. And so I think as we go through that, it's just necessary to go through the growing pains and lean into it and embrace the discomfort and the journey. And so not everyone is up to doing that. And sometimes people are going to come and go, and that makes things hard. And here I am, someone who's going to come and go, right? So,
but it's nice to have you here helping lay the groundwork for what the future is going to look like. Because like you said, with a 30-year organization, change is hard, especially when you've had people who have been supporters, donors, board members, you know, attendees at all of your events for that long, and they expect everything to be a certain way, even though it's very likely most of them are all aligned with new parts of the mission.
Totally.
It's sometimes, I mean, you have your elevator speech and you know what Citizens Project is and what they stand for, and all of a sudden that has to change.
Yeah. You know? I mean, that's it. That's it in a nutshell. But I think, you know, like to your point, it's not that people aren't supportive. It's that, you know, mission creep is a pretty constant thing in the nonprofit world. I think that disrupts people's work and that can cause a lot of issues. This is my first nonprofit job, by the way. The more that I dig into this, I think there's also an element of, in an underserved community, you should expect mission creep and you should expect some drift, because folks are already not getting their needs met by the existing system. So if you're there to serve, you might need to shift to move into spaces you didn't expect to be in, right? So, you know, 30 odd years ago, the move was, hey, our community is facing this political agenda that isn't part of us, that isn't homegrown, and we need to push back against it. So here's this voter guide, so you know where your city council, you know, your city council candidates and school board candidates stand on this issue. Here's some commentary about things they're saying at City Hall so that you can hold your electeds accountable. And it's kind of around all of those little things, but the community needs something more than that. And if we can't rise to meet it, then we can't stay relevant.
Well, racial justice didn't seem like a shock to me for Citizens Project. That just seemed like a natural thing to be
right.
part of your mission.
Right.
I actually remember one of the breakfasts back in the day, and one of your speakers was a young Black man who had moved to town, and his experience moving to town was shocking to me that that was still happening. So again, like you said, it's not surprising. It's kind of surprising it hasn't been there, but it's surprising we still have to do all of this.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and then also, you know, I think for folks and you know, just for everyone's reference, here we are, like, this is a group of, you know, rather white folks. I think for folks in any kind of minority group or marginalized group, they will tell you that, like, well, this is just a regular part. We didn't fix anything. We never, like, totally fix everything, right? So, you know, a culture that has a lot of white supremacy in its roots is going to have problems with race probably all the time. It's a core injury. You know, folks with disabilities are always getting left out. Queer folks are always getting left out, right? Like, so it's kind of like not that crazy that we would always have work to do and that it would never really be finished, right? It's like housework. Why would it be finished?
I guess what I mean by the crazy part is like that it feels like we're stepping back so much. I mean, yeah. And again, I'm very white, so I come from an absolutely different part of the community, but it's like you feel like you make some progress. And then again, whether it's at a national level and you'd have these steps back where you thought, oh my God, we're having this conversation again. So. Yeah.
Reminds me of those evolution cartoons where,
well, sure.
You know, where we look like we're making progress and then all of a sudden, I don't remember what the new end of the line is, but it doesn't look like it's progress anymore.
You raise a good point with that, right? Because I think that's a very flawed way to look at the world. If we're really imagining, you know, that our existence in humanity is just a constant progress of things getting better and better and better, quote unquote, because we don't know that that's the nature of reality, right? That's certainly like a mindset that I think serves certain folks really well. Certainly if you are in the business of selling people more and more things and fixing problems, quote unquote, then yeah, like you want that linear progression towards a point of perfection or, you know, a point of like, we did it, it's all done. But I think, you know, if you start to like poke little holes in that, it doesn't hold up well, just historically speaking.
Well, I don't think you're saying we shouldn't aspire to be better, but we should certainly define what better is.
And better for one is not necessarily better for all.
Yeah.
So.
And I don't mean making more money next year than you did this year and having more toys and the like.
Right.
Building a better community or creating community, building a more perfect union sounds like the way to go. And I got to give Amy Devine and this organization in 92, I was stationed at Peterson Air Force Base as an outsider, having my WTF moment as a military troop, saying, what's going on in my community? And to think that we are back in basically the same spot is kind of disheartening, but it is hopeful that we understand that and we keep going. So here we are.
Hey, and Al sounds a little bit funny because he's remote. He's kind of like our Charles Kuralt. He's always roaming the country. He's coming to us from Lyman, Colorado today.
I almost made it back for that bike to work breakfast, but not quite.
Nice try. We should mention Bike to Work Day. Our last episode, we talked about that, and we're recording on Bike to Work Day, June 25th. And I just came from a couple of those breakfast stations, and they were awesome, and the weather's beautiful, and a lot of bicycles out there.
I'm so glad to hear that. I know they do a lot of outreach and a lot of publicity, and a lot of nonprofits and city organizations and businesses get involved to make sure that there's a little extra enticement to encourage people that might not usually get on their bike and head someplace to do it today. So lots of, I saw burritos and coffee and bacon. And I even saw one post about a bike home from work day beer specials. So that might be happening too.
Yeah. And I learned today how to put my bicycle on the rack on the front of a bus.
Well done. There's an evening cruise ride too. Leaves from Lincoln Center, goes to Angle Tech and then returns to Lincoln Center, but there's a DJ playing at Angle Tech this evening.
That's the Wednesday night ride. They do that every week. It's kind of in my neighborhood, actually. I try to go more, but I do too many things and I don't get enough downtime.
Yeah, so returning to Citizens Project, what's changing?
Sure. You know, it's a lot of internal work, right? It's certainly, you know, filling out our board, kind of adding some new board members and kind of getting more decision makers at the table. You know, sometimes if, for those of you who do any sort of board governed anything, you know, if you start to run it sort of like a minimum number of board members, people get a little burnt out and it's better to have more decision makers at the table, sort of sharing the load. It's many hands make light work, I believe is the old saying. So, and we kind of need to do, you know, before, I think really before we dig in super deep into like strategic planning, like deep goal setting, to kind of get our bearings for the next couple of years and figure out what people most want from the community. So when I stepped into the role, the first thing I did was start just setting up, but whether they were one-on-ones or group meetings with all kinds of our partner organizations in the area who have, you know, themselves through been a lot of changes and have seen a lot of changes in the communities that they serve and sort of see, you know, what's going really well for you? What are you achieving really well? Because we're not here to step on toes. I'm here to look for the negative space, right? What are the unmet needs that are still out there? And how can Citizens Project like grow into the future that we're growing into to meet those needs?
Is there something you've heard kind of over and over from a lot of those organizations?
Yeah, the voter education piece is huge, right? And I think it's certainly it's been really important for folks to have that voter guide before every election. I think it's especially important for the odd year elections that are nonpartisan. You know, right or wrong, most people make most of their voting decisions in even years based on partisan alignment, right? Which means, you know, even if there's some variation on it, it's a good starting place. But for like city council and for school boards and even for mayor, like I think a lot of people just look at that and go, I don't know who any of these people are. I don't know who they are. I don't know what they stand for. We can say that city council is nonpartisan, but of course, you know, if you see in the news that something passed or failed or whatever on a 7-2 vote, like you can usually guess who the two are depending on the topic, right? Like we all kind of know who our folks are after they're in office. And that's not really fair to the public to not be able to suss out like who they're voting for and to be able to make an informed choice. And so we are finding that especially in the odd year elections, people feel really strongly about having that be a robust program. And then there's sort of a, you know, I think there's sort of a void of local watchdog that we need more kinds of voices that do that work, who are monitoring city council on a regular basis, who are paying attention to school boards on a regular basis. The local media may or may not always pick up on things that are important to people because you kind of have to go and sit through a lot of dry meetings in order to find out what's going on. You have to, you know, make good use of technology to kind of pull out the really relevant information and sound the alarm to people who might be concerned about what's happening. So, you know, for instance, we did take a position on the Carmen Line annexation, which if you haven't looked at the news in the last week went down in flames, which we were really excited about. I expected us to win. I did not expect us to crush it 82 to 18%.
Should I have not been surprised that Citizens Project took a position on that?
What, are you saying you were surprised or?
Yeah, I was thinking that historically Citizens Project rarely takes positions on things like that.
Sure. Well, I say we were joined by League of Women Voters, right? So I think we, you know, we were both in alignment about that, and it's a partner organization for us. We tend to be roughly on the same page. Uh-huh. I think, and maybe this is like Steph Vigil coming in here with a lot of like land use policy behind me, but I quickly was like, hey, y'all, like we should, I'm not going to take a vote on our policy and advocacy committee because I recuse myself from votes on that on account of being a recent state legislator. The revolving door law is actually pretty generous. But just out of an abundance of caution, I don't take a vote on those things. But I was like, you should look at this issue and discuss it amongst yourselves and see whether you think we should take a position, because this is exactly the kind of policy that seems very nuts and bolts, very dry, very boring, doesn't really have anything to do with how justice and equity show up in people's everyday lives. But I guarantee you, you will find it if you start looking, right? Low density suburban sprawl increases car dependency. We all just talked about bike to work day. And I do think it's great that local businesses and orgs are offering little incentives to people along the way. But the thing that will really get people to embrace other transportation options is for it to be a viable option. A lot of people would love to not need a car. They would love to not drive. Mm-hmm. But the city is not being expanded in a way that allows for that kind of travel. I'm sorry, but if you build like thousands of new homes, 3.5 miles, well outside of town, no way in and out but a car, you have just created a whole new section of car dependency again.
Yep.
That high-speed car traffic is especially dangerous in the Southeast, right? So one of our constituent communities for Citizens Project has become the Southeast Corridor, because this is a part of our city that has historically been undervalued, not invested in. The average temperature is, I think, 6 degrees higher per year. Does anyone know that? I might be misquoting that.
I think I read it was even more than that.
It might be more than that, yeah. Right? Right, that's a lack of tree cover. That's, you know, certain kinds of civic engineering that benefit communities like where we are right now, right? Like Old North End area compared to Southeast. That's a huge quality of life issue. Some of our deadliest intersections where people get hit and killed outside of cars the most are in Southeast Colorado Springs. The life expectancy is lower. Like it just, you start to add all these things up and it's like, why are we going to double down on this sprawl, right? And leave behind this community and divert resources away from undervalued and neglected parts of town just so that we can do even more greenfield development far outside of town. And it skirted the rules to boot. I think that was the thing that really got to us, is we're like, you know what? On top of all of the rest of that stuff, the whole idea behind a flagpole annexation is that this development doesn't meet our own standards for annexation. So cheat code, we're going to add this. And we're just like, no, like people should be mad about this. Here's what they did. Here's why we oppose it. If you agree that this is not responsible, vote no. And I think it worked.
Well, I tell you, the campaign, really, I think campaigns on both sides of the issue were fairly misleading. I mean, there was a lot of misleading information out there because everybody decided this is about water. How can we scare people about water?
Sure. And honestly, I'll say we didn't, that was not part of our messaging,
right,
but,
yeah.
You know, and I find myself frequently bickering with even folks who I'm very aligned with on a lot of policy about what is and is not a water emergency in Colorado Springs. Colorado Springs Utilities does a really great job sourcing water rights for us. We use the same amount of water right now as we did in the mid-80s when we had half the population we do now. So it's kind of like, well, yeah, it's about water supply, but it's also about like the cost of the infrastructure to deliver and process and repurpose it and all of that. And to me, this is the poor use of ratepayer funds when we could be investing in the community we already have and using the infrastructure we've already paid for.
Yeah, and good points, but I don't want any listeners to walk away from this episode thinking, oh, so future water supply
sure.
isn't a challenge. I mean, they're
it
definitely, Colorado Springs Utilities thinks it's going to be a challenge.
Correct.
And so acquisition of more water rights has definitely
yeah.
got their attention. And the nature of the Colorado River is such that what seems like plenty of water today, some of that could go away, a big chunk of that. So.
Yeah.
You never know.
No, absolutely. And I think for the folks who made it about water, like I said, it's a convenient thing to latch onto. And also it's like, well, we could put like the same 9,000 houses where we are, and it would not be the same sort of hit to the system and the supply. As,
yeah.
Right.
And then the other side was talking about the Norwood cartel.
Here's what I will say about that. And this is with my Citizens Project hat on.
Okay.
You may quote me on this.
Right.
It's really important that we don't get regulation of the housing market confused with capture of the housing market, right? We actually don't have an unrestricted housing market. We actually have like a lot of land use laws. Some of them have been lifted or loosened, but usually not very willingly by the city. And then I think we have found that we have like a handful of major developers who are always allowed to get what they want, not because the rules are so loose, but because they are so restrictive and they're the only ones who can afford to bend City Hall to their will. And I think like ordinary citizens should definitely feel empowered to show up and say, no, I want to build this ADU on my own land behind
yeah.
my house. You're supposed to be making it easier for me, not harder.
Well said.
I want to jump back to your voter's guide. So you guys have been doing this forever. And one thing I've always appreciated about it is that the questions go out to everyone. They're published unedited. So even if that means there's typos in the answers, like you see the time that someone has taken to respond. And if, you know, they've done it in a hurry and it has typos in it, like you guys don't edit it. And if someone doesn't answer, you also include them. You include their contact information, their picture, like how to get in touch with them. But the fact that they didn't respond, and it really gives you a full picture of the slate of people running for council or for school board or anything and who takes the time to want to engage and get their views in front of the public. And that's one thing I've really always yeah. appreciated about the Citizens Project Voters Guide, is how complete it is, even when people don't respond.
We love to hear that. As interim ED at Citizens Project, I love to hear that. We do take that really seriously, that that's something the community is looking to. So,
well, and it's also one of the most accessible ways that we as a community and voters can get information, because there's often a lot of voter forms, you know, the in-person forms. And I love that opportunity because, you know, you get to ask questions and stuff. But I mean, they're usually an hour long, depending on what part of town they're in. Can you get there? Depending on what time of day it is, can you get there? I mean, it's a great opportunity, but it can be very inconvenient for the masses. And so the fact that you've got a voter's guide that is online, does it still go out in some of the media?
This year, we partnered with the Pikes Peak Bulletin.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which was a little bit different. In the past, Citizens Project has done an insert in the Colorado Springs Independent.
What's that?
I know, right? We've seen enough changes and coming and going of that publication that this year just seemed like, you know what, this is like a different venue for us to try to go with the bulletin. And many of your listeners, I'm sure will have noted, they've been expanding their reach and their footprint. So thought, well, let's give this a try and see if this is a good partnership for us. And I think it was very successful. We got it in front of enough eyes to ensure, you know, as good of a voter turnout as we can hope for. And some of the districts where we have low voter turnout, we're always pushing for more participation. But yeah, it was kind of fun to do something different there.
They're certainly doing some impressive work, and they're going to be future guests on this podcast, so we'll learn more about their plans.
So Steph, I have another question. If someone isn't familiar with your voter's guide and they want to make sure the next time you put one out, they get access to it, do you guys have an e-newsletter or something they can sign up for? Like, how can people get more information about Citizens Project if they haven't been involved in a while or new to town or
Sure.
This is the first they're hearing about you.
Yeah, that's great. Citizensproject.org. So if you go to our website, we do put out a newsletter. I want to say it's biweekly, but since I've been around, I've been a little bit more communicative and we've been doing them weekly on occasion as well. Those newsletters tend to include a little bit of commentary on kind of what's going on around us in the community and opportunities to speak in front of council or something like that. And certainly any of the sort of like advocacy and voter education that we put out, including our legislator report card, which is a little bit more on the flip side of a voter guide.
Awesome. I love that. I mean, more and more as we live in, you know, a larger international world because we're connected to everything, I also feel like a lot of us have shrunken into a very smaller personal world and you live attached to your phone. And so if that's going to be the case, like, let's meet people where they are. And if they're digitally, like, sign up and get your news that way, get your information that way, ways to get involved. And then maybe we can get people out away from their phone and at council or doing some of those things as well. So citizensproject.org, sign up for the newsletter.
And that's a good place to go if you want to buy tickets to attend the Creating Community Breakfast, July 12th, right?
Yes.
We do have an election coming up this fall, local election, school board, maybe a few other little surprises thrown in there. Can we expect the usual emphasis from Citizens Project on voter registration and getting people to actually show up at the polls? And
yeah, absolutely. I really want to see us doing more GOTV work, get out the vote. So, you know, maybe just a quick primer for that for your listeners, right? A lot of times campaigns will do this, parties will do this, which is like once the ballots are out to do a really big push to like, okay, like you heard about people, you may have made a decision. It doesn't count for anything if you don't fill out your ballot and get it turned in time, right? And in the even years, like political parties will do a lot of that work. In the odd years, I think there's really an impetus on organizations like ours to fill that need and make sure that people are getting the nudge, the reminder, the information they need, where to find a Dropbox, etc. But yes, we will be doing that and we will definitely be doing voter guides as well.
Great, because those are important.
Yeah, elections. And this will be a very big one because we have to cover more of the school districts.
I have started to hear some peeps about people that will be running for school board, especially D11. So I'm very excited to see that kind of play out and see if we end up with a slate of folks for that school
board.
Yeah,
that'd be nice to have some pleasant surprises. And that reminds me, I think we should have mentioned it. I haven't seen what the final tally was, but didn't we have a greater turnout voting for this Carmen Line annexation than we did in the city council elections?
Oh, I don't know if it was more. I think they were comparable.
Yeah, I heard they were like pretty close and maybe Carmen Line was more.
If I saw the numbers, they disappeared quickly into my scrambled eggs brain. But
that's shocking to me. I mean, that's how important growth and water are to the public, though, I think.
Sure. Well, I think especially when it's a, you know, pretty like yes or no single issue, thumbs up, thumbs down kind of thing. What I was really interested to see, especially because I was worried it would be close, is like how much further over to the no we got. Because a lot of times, especially for a ballot issue, if it is a toss up and we can't get a read on what the public sentiment is, a no vote is slightly favored to win regardless. But for 82%, I feel like there's a lot more going on there. Just because if a voter is looking at an issue decision and they're not sure what they think or they feel confused or they feel overwhelmed, their default is going to be no, not yes, or to not vote at all, which also disadvantages the yes. So no's are slightly favored to win in ballot issues.
Interesting note. Yeah. Hadn't known that.
We have a very active listening audience. Like the folks that listen to our podcast like to do things. So we're going to encourage you all to go out to the Creating Community Breakfast on July 12th, 8 o'clock at the Carter Payne. Head to citizensproject.org for tickets. I imagine they'll learn a little bit more about what Citizens Project has been doing and what the future holds. And it sounded like you said you are potentially looking to fill out your board. So if we have active, engaging listeners that might be interested in board service based on what they've heard today, they can learn more at the community breakfast and then reach out to you for possibilities.
I would love for people to do that. And I also love for people to come volunteer to serve on one of our committees, right? Like our policy and advocacy or doing voter contact or planning events. Like we have lots of opportunities for people to step in and do even just small amounts of leadership. But I would love for us to kind of get back to days when Citizens Project had a lot more hands on deck and we haven't really been there. That can be really challenging to do for folks who have done nonprofit work, campaign work, any of that sort of thing that's very volunteer dependent. If you start to back away at all from your volunteer base, you kind of sometimes have to start from scratch. So I'm doing a lot of that work and kind of re-engaging our volunteer base as well. So come on board.
Well, and volunteering and committee work is a really great way to get a taste of what an organization does, and then you can kind of find your direction and see when and if you have the time and commitment to jump in more.
Yeah, it's good leadership growth too for people that come off the sidelines, sounds like it may not be your audience. Sounds like you guys are mostly off the sidelines already, but for those folks, for students, for young people, for people who have generally been politically disengaged, this is a great way to get your toe in the water.
It's a lot better than Match.com and Tinder too.
What is there a story there, Dave?
No.
Did you?
No, but if I was young and on the market,
you know?
That's what I would do. I would volunteer and get actively involved in these local organizations. That's where you're going to meet cool people. Yeah.
We should use that angle, like
a singles volunteer meetup.
Oh,
at
my
Citizens
God.
Project.
You all are brilliant. I'm taking mental notes over here. That sounds great.
I'm a firm believer of what gets rewarded gets done. And at the breakfast is the Amy Devine Award. So could you tell us a little bit about the criteria and what gets rewarded by that award?
The Devine Award is named for our founder. We make sort of an internal decision about who should be recognized in a given year. And we have not announced our winners yet, and so I won't do it here. But we have an individual award, and then we also have an organizational award. So there's an organization in town that will receive one as well. And a lot of what we are looking for when we pick somebody for that is somebody who's just doing the work. A number one, right? Whether that is just fighting for greater equity, justice, civic engagement, and specifically if they have not been getting recognized anywhere else. To me, that kind of feels like that's a good space for us to fill, right? If they're already getting their flowers out there in the community, that's great, good for them. Not that I don't want to honor them, but we definitely want to make sure that we are kind of pulling people out of the space where they're not necessarily being seen by the public or getting the praise they deserve, and make sure that they're lauded for at least that one day.
Wow, I look forward to accepting that award.
He's making jokes today. Good one.
Any final questions, folks?
Of course we have a final question. This is Loving the Springs, and it wouldn't be complete if we didn't ask you, what do you love about Colorado Springs?
Oh, I have a good answer for this. I'll try to keep it concise. I always had the impression I lived here before. So I grew up in Michigan. I lived here. I moved to Chicago. I moved back, right? When I moved away, I really had this notion in my head, for whatever reason, that this was a very rugged, individualistic community, right? That people don't seem to team up to do things. And I can't seem to find a community space that I can get plugged into. And what I found when I ended up moving back here is that we just have a special way of doing it in the Springs. And I think if people tap into that and understand how it works, they will be so much happier. They will be so much more fulfilled here. So back before Euro people started settling this space, this was never a settlement. Tribes did not live here permanently. People met here. They would have councils to resolve disputes. They would have hunting parties together, but then they split up and went their separate ways when they were done. And I do really feel like there's a through line, and it's a little mystical, bear with me. I feel like there's a through line between those roots and how we kind of still operate here as a city today, which is that anything that you want to get done, anything that you care about, anything that you're passionate about, you can pull together people to get it done and have partnership in it, even if that little faction doesn't last. And it is okay that it doesn't last. Pull together with your folks who care a lot about a certain thing, right? Whether it's right now, there's a fight to save the libraries. You think all of those folks agree on politics, on taxes, on... No, they do not. But they want to save their library. And once that is done, it will be perfectly okay for people to disperse and do their other thing, right? We teamed up with people we don't necessarily have a lot in common with to stop the Carmen Line annexation. We're probably not going to be on the same side of things when it comes to LGBTQ rights in a month from now or something, right? But it doesn't matter, because we can come together, we can make a team, we can get something done, and then we can go back to being ordinary neighbors. And I think that fluidity is so good for this community. If we would embrace it, I think it's magical.
That's the same old answer we get from everybody.
Is that it? That's the one?
No, it's not.
Nope, that's a new one. That's great.
That was an amazing answer,
oh,
by
thanks.
The way.
Thank you for that.
I love that John Weiss, who used to own the Independent, he always
kind of looked for strange bedfellows for exactly that reason. And whether it was, you know, a conservative religious organization that he wanted to partner with on something like foster care or environmentalism, I remember him saying things like, we'll call it environmentalism, they'll call it stewardship, but if we can do this one thing together, we can make a connection there. Again, we are not going to agree on everything, but if we agree on this and we can move the needle forward, like, it makes the community better. And so I love that.
Firm agree.
Well, Steffi Hill, interim executive director of Citizens Project, a beloved local nonprofit with a long, valuable history here. I'll look forward to seeing you at the Creating Community Breakfast, July 12th. Thank you very much for joining us here on Loving the Springs, where we celebrate the best and elevate the rest.
And we're coming to you from the Studio 809 Community Podcast Studio at the Next Us, a professional cooperative environment for small businesses in downtown Colorado Springs.
In the Pikes Peak region, there's no shortage of activities. Whether you're experiencing breathtaking parks or magnificent works of art, if you're getting fashionable at a film festival, or fresh at a farmer's market, if you want to hear the sweet sounds of a symphony or the smooth shred of a Stratocaster, look no further than Peak Radar, your one-stop shop for all events in the Pikes Peak region, your free source for viewing and posting events. So no matter how you engage with our beautiful region, visit peakradar.com and get plugged into the peak.